You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello everyone, welcome to another video from Fantasy Football Scout. It is time for the weekly Q&A with myself, Az, and the lovely Sam. How are you, Sam?
I'm good. How are you doing?
I'm good. I've put you a red arrow this week, but you are actually a red arrow this week, right? I haven't messed it up again. That's good.
I am rightly deserving of a red arrow this week.
730,901 for Sam, 319,891. There was only one point in it last week, but I've put a bit of space between us now.
Yeah, it was one of those weeks that I went, when Nuno did his press conference on Friday and ruled Sun out, I was kind of like, right, I've got a real dilemma to make now. Do I very quickly, in like 4 hours, play my wild card, or do I hold off, just try and survive the game week, and then know that I can hit the wild card on Saturday once the game week started and have a week of time to think about it? And that's what I decided to do. So it was kind of just a case of let's make a couple of transfers. Let's try and as best we can survive the game week and go from there. And then, of course, I took a -4 for Jimenez, who got one, and Mason Mount, who didn't play. And it was just like...
I hate those weeks. I hate those weeks where you know you're probably going to have a bad one, but you kind of think, oh, well, hopefully I can just get through it and then
survive.
And then you just don't really survive. And everyone's had a really good week. And yeah, I have those weeks all the time. And especially around wildcard time, because you're trying to save the wildcard. Exactly what I'm doing at the moment as well. Trying to save the wildcard. And I think the majority of people who played it last week probably feel pretty good about it. I mean, if they went for Lukaku and Ronaldo, you know, they've avoided taking -4s, -8s, like Damari Gray and Decore and some of the other 5 million players blanked. Benrahma was massively sold and blanked. So yeah, be interesting to know if you played a wild card and didn't do well, kind of who you got, because I think the majority of people did quite well. Right, so we've got loads of questions to get through. There's a bit of a change. Last week, we had quite a few comments from the chat saying we were ignoring them. It is quite difficult for me to read the comments from the chat because so many come in. So I've put super chats on. So if you want to ask us a question that we will definitely answer, there's a little like dollar symbol thing that you can click, and then you can send a super chat in, and what that does is basically flashes up on my screen in massive bold blue letters, and Sam and I will definitely answer that before the end of the stream. No pressure, you don't have to do it. If you don't care that much and don't want to chuck some pennies at us to answer them, then you don't feel like you have to, but it's just a way that we can answer questions if you're desperate, and it will stop people complaining that we're ignoring them. I will try and answer some questions from the chat anyway as we go. But again, just to remind you, a hot topic goes up on the site the day before the Q&A. There's a Twitter post as well, Instagram. So if you ask questions on that, then Sam and I will try and answer on those as well. Right, we got some good questions, really good questions, actually. So from Fantasy Football Scout, Jack Root, Energetics and Delia are all asking about the common question this week, which is, do we need to go with 3 premiums or to go with 2? If we're including Trent as a premium option as well, do we go with 4? What's your kind of take on it? Sam, you've got 2, haven't you? At the moment, you've still got one, haven't you? You just got Salah.
No, so well, So pre-wildcard, I had Salah and Fernandes and Trent as and Son as my kind of big hitters. I'm currently wildcarding.
We won't include Trent as a premium. We'll say it's the mid to out and 40.
At the moment, I've got two in Salah and Lukaku. They're my current two in my draft. I guess this is really difficult because I've spent a lot of time, obviously, with my wildcard active, just tinkering around and trying to build a squad that has Salah and Lukaku and Ronaldo.
Mm.
But it massively compromises, because I want Trent as well, it massively compromises a lot of the other positions. So it means that every week I'm going to be having to play one player who I wouldn't necessarily want to play. So be that the 4.5 midfielder or be it one of the 4.0 defenders. Now, some weeks I'm happy to play a 4.0 defender, but there are going to be some weeks where I'm not. So it's kind of weighing up the balance between how many of those mid-price midfielders I can have and I think could do well, the likes of Jota and Greenwood and maybe Pogba in there as well and Torres versus Ronaldo. So can two of them account for one of him effectively?
Yeah, I mean, the best team I could put together, I'll read it out to you. I can't find a way of doing it, of having Lukaku, Ronaldo and Salah and Trent and not having two 6 mil or under mids, basically.
But yeah, that's how you have to, yeah.
So the team I've put together is Sanchez and Foster, Trent, Reece James and Marcel, which is pretty decent defence, with Livramento and Williams. And then Salah, Rafinha, Gallagher and Doucouré. So it's not awful, but it's
not great.
It's lightweight. But then up front, I've got Lukaku, Ronaldo and managed to get Jimenez.
This is the difficulty, isn't it? So I keep looking at my draft. So I've got one that's got, it looks very similar to that one you've just read out. And then I've got the current one that I'm on at the moment, which has, I'll read it to you. It has the same sort of players in terms of the defence, but maybe slight upgrades on them because of that. So at the moment, it's Sanchez and Steele, Semedo, Trent, Shaw, Williams and Livramento. So same kind of pattern, but with Semedo over Marcel. And then in midfield, I've got Salah, Gray, Jota, Torres, Greenwood, who keep rotating in and out depending upon who I fancy, and then the cheap 4.5. And then up top, Antonio, Lukaku and Jimenez. So I kind of feel like I've got a better squad depth by doing it that way. And maybe if Ronaldo's fixtures were really good, like Lukaku's are from seven, if they both had this amazing run of fixtures, then maybe at that point I'd be like, right, I just need to not worry about squad depth and I need to just go with them. But because Ronaldo's fixtures are a bit hit and miss from seven, that's why I'm kind of pondering on going with a couple of that middle price bracket in the middle, because I think they might get better returns.
Yeah, I mean, the other option, of course, is you go four at the back, which I'm just not a huge fan of. I mean, the biggest problem with all of this is you're just completely limiting your flexibility of your squad by going with three of these premiums in midfield and up front. Like, we're going to see other options emerge. You're going to want to move for, you know, £6-7 million players and defenders, and, you know, Chelsea's fixture turning well. There's loads of things we're going to want to do. And I think, especially if after a wild card, you want to stay a little bit flexible to be able to move for these. Also, next two fixtures, Salah's probably going to be captained by nearly everyone.
Yes, absolutely.
Lukaku's fixtures are quite tough. Then Ronaldo's get quite hard. I'm still on the side that I don't think you need Lukaku, Ronaldo and Salah. I think it compromises too much in the rest of your team, personally.
I tend to agree with you, actually, because having looked at it for a lot of hours so far since Saturday's wildcard was hit, I can't find a team that I'm happy with that has... I'm obviously happy to have them, plus Trent, but I look at the rest and I think there are so many players that I can't get because I've gone with you.
Yeah.
So the compromise for me is, would I rather have more of those guys that I do want or just one of the extra big premiums? And I think with squad depth being quite important to me, I'm more inclined to just leave out one of the big hitters.
Yeah, I think Gallagher's probably the one around the under six million mark that I'd feel the most comfortable with owning sort of longer term. I still have my doubts about Gray. I know he's got three goals, but he's had three shots basically. Decore, I really, really like, but there's always that risk that he's going to fall back into a deeper role and not be doing stuff as much as he is. And Bomo's just not delivered anything so far, although Haddock did have a couple of chances. So I think if you're going to do it, I think Gallagher is a good option. But the likes of Sarr and Traore aren't performing as well. So, yeah, it's tricky. We've had our first Super Chat, Sam. Our first ever Super Chat. Eason asked, what point do you really start to look at your rank? What would you be considered decent at that point? For example, if you're aiming for the top 50 to 100K. So at the moment, are you kind of caring where you're at? Or where do you start to kind of look and think, oh God, I'm not doing well, or this is a good start?
It's normally second international break for me. The second international break I normally use as a kind of a point where I start to think about where I am, because normally that comes in and around the time that I would maybe think about wildcarding. Mm. So obviously I've gone a bit early on the wildcard this year. But I do think at the moment, what we see in the early part of the season is that one point is such a massive difference in terms of where you are overall rank. So you have one extra point and suddenly you're, you know, 100,000 places further up than you were before. So it's very difficult to take that seriously until we get a bit more settled. And I tend to find by international break, the managers that don't really want to play the game or have given up on the game have kind of given up by that stage anyway. So you start to have a few more dead teams and you start to get things settling down with transfer market, usually not so many price rises and falls and crazy ones anyway. So in second international break for me is normally when I pay attention. But I also don't think it's that. So as long as you're sort of in and around, if I was at 1 million by the time I get to the first international break, I still think that you can have a top 50K, 10K finish from there, because things change so quickly in this part of the season. If you get post Christmas and you're not in the top 500,000, it's going to be difficult.
Yeah. I mean, you're talking to someone who's had three very, very bad starts over the last couple of years. This is my best start in years, which is...
My worst start. Is it?
It's funny how it kind of turns around. Yeah. I think around game week 10 is when I start paying a little bit of attention to it. And I think, and as I enter maybe halfway through the season, that's when I might start reevaluating my targets. So at the moment, I'm very much fixated on top 10,000. That's still, to me, where I want to be finishing every season. You know, the amount of work I put in, I do this like full time. I have to regard myself as a top 10,000 manager, even though I haven't hit those heights in quite a long time. But then I think when you get about halfway through the season, you look at where you are and you think, okay, I'm 500,000, 1 million. That's when you start to say, okay, I need to get into the top 250,000. I need to get into the top 100,000. And then it starts to be, they're the people that I'm looking at.
It's staging it, isn't it?
It's staging it, yeah, absolutely. I think at this stage, you're completely right. There's so little in it that you can't really break it down into those points categories because it's almost impossible to do. But
you think, I mean, I had a better than average game week last week and lost, what, 300K, 200K of places. Like, it's not like, I didn't have a terrible game week. It was fine. It wasn't brilliant, but it was fine. But it's cost me 200, nearly 300K in places. So when you're at that stage, you know, you kind of go, well, you need to make, there's no point in getting upset about ranks right now.
No, there's not.
It's not worth it.
It's not. Also, equally, I don't think there's any point in like making moves to try and catch people up or to not lose ground or to protect. It's just too early. So just carry on playing your own game and don't worry about it until, after international break, then you can start to have a little look and see, okay, am I where I want to be? Great question. Right, Kark and No Salah. So another big question here, Antonio and Calvert-Lewin. Obviously one suspended for the next game, one injured completely out of the blue. I was not expecting that at all.
Nope.
For Calvert-Lewin. What do we do with them? Would you keep, I mean, it's obviously different situations. Antonio's only out for one game, Calvert-Lewin's out for a while. What would you do?
Calvert-Lewin, I'd sell. That's an easy answer. I think at the price point that he is, there's so many other options that you can go to. You can come down, you can go up. Like, he just offers you a lot of flexibility. And he said so far, 2 to 3 weeks? But this broken toe, quad muscle, thigh, he seems to have had so many different things in the last, 72 hours. He seems to have had, multiple
different things. Just training last week. There's pictures of him.
Well, that's it. A lot of managers brought him in because, and the picture of him was like jumping in the air. So it's not like he's sat on the floor at training. He was actually fully involved. So it's very difficult with Dominic Calvert-Lewin to hold him now, because I think until we get to a place where we get some certainty that the toe is fixed, that his quad muscle is okay, and his thigh, whatever was wrong with that, is okay, then you can't pick him. So whereas I think Antonio is slightly more difficult, because I've had him since pre-season. Obviously came into my team at 7.5 million. He's 7.9 million now. So if I take him out ahead of this suspension game on the weekend, and then I want to bring him back for the next two fixtures, which do look nice afterwards, I've got to pay an extra 0.4 to do that. I can't bring myself to take him out. So I think for me, was I expecting a big haul for him against Manchester United anyway? Probably not. So if I just bench him this time and then have him to come back in for the fixtures that follow, that seems to me to be a nice, easy fix.
Yeah, and it gives a chance for players like Billy Gilmore, Williams, Livramento, you know, these absolute, you know, peak guys to come into our teams and do it. Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, Calvert-Lewin, I think, is an easy sell. There's options around him that you can move to. Jimenez, Bamford, you know, you can move up to Ronaldo Lukaku if you take Fernandes out, for example. And I think it's going to push a lot of people to do that. So I think that's a complete no-brainer. There's no sense in holding him. We don't know how long he's out for. It's going to be a minimum of 2 to 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Probably longer. We don't know how he's going to be when he comes back. It's, yeah, he's easiest sell, I think, in the world. Antonio, if you sell him, I don't think you get him back.
I think
you lose value on him. He comes in with Leeds and Brentford, but then has a really tough run from game week 8 of Everton, Spurs, Villa, Liverpool, Wolves, City. Awful, awful run of fixtures. I think it's an easy keep for Antonio, personally.
Until game week 8, I think it is. I can't see why it's a one-game suspension. If it was a two-game suspension, I think there's a conversation, because then you're keeping him for one match. But for a one-game suspension against Manchester United, for then to be two nice fixtures that follow, to me that seems... I just feel like it's a bit knee-jerk to just get rid of him, because I know I'll look at my team for game week 6 and think, oh, I wish I had Antonio. I know.
Exactly. Especially if you move for like Bamford, because if it's Bamford versus Antonio going into that Leeds-West Ham game, I want Antonio, no doubt, out of the two. If it's Antonio versus Jimenez, even with good fixtures, it's still Antonio 1. I mean, his form has just been so good in the early stages. So, yeah, I keep saying so. It's an easy keep for me. I don't think it's a terrible decision to get rid of him for Bamford or Jimenez if your bench isn't very strong.
Some managers did only buy him game week 3, game week 4.
Yeah.
If you only bought him in game week 3 or game week 4, then it makes a lot of sense to sell.
Yeah, I agree.
But if you've had him like I have since pre-season, I'd consider keeping him.
Yeah. I mean, Abdelia Belch says Antonio is capable of scoring against anyone. He's a season keeper. I mean, he could well end up being. I mean, you know.
If he stays fit.
If he stays fit. He's got a tough run. Obviously, they've got Europe. But, you know, I think...
And there's other players in that category with much nicer runs.
True.
While he's got the difficult ones. So, yes, he could... It's the same with everything, isn't it? You know, yes... He could score against that difficult run of fixtures, but is he likely to get as many as, say, one of the other players could if they've got an easier fixture? It's kind of ways and balancing out.
It's going to be interesting what happens with him. And he's already lost sort of 10% ownership. It's down to 40%, yeah. I think, maybe even less now. 39.5. So he was above 50. And Benrahma's another one. I mean, Benrahma's 31%. He hasn't scored in a few weeks. Got subbed off for Vlasic. I think he's going to be sold by quite a few too.
He hasn't scored since I bought him.
Yeah, well, that's just typical, isn't it? And I bet a lot of Antonio people are saying that. So Mick Stewart on Twitter asks, is it time to de-invest in West Ham? Because we've got quite a lot of these big guns who, you know, haven't performed or are suspended or whatever. Tough run of fixtures coming up. I've got Soufal as well. Obviously got United. West Ham have kept a couple of clean sheets, but, you know, I'm looking at him thinking from game week 8, he's probably not going to get too many. What do you think about West Ham in general? Do you reckon you'll be losing Benrahma, for example?
Yeah. I won't hold Benrahma through my wild card. I can't see me having him. Just simply because whilst he can be brilliant, and we saw that in the opening two game weeks of the season, he can be fantastic. There are other players in that ballpark price that I think, one, could be better if I drop slightly, the likes of Gallagher, because of what it enables you to do with the rest of the money across your team. But also, I can bring him up to Greenwood, to Pogba, to Torres, to Jota, to maybe Mason Mount eventually, knowing that they're playing in great teams who have more capability of playing on two fronts in terms of Europe and the Premier League, because they've got better squad depth. Whereas I look at West Ham and I do worry about their squad depth going through. You know, we saw it with Wolves a couple of seasons ago, that it's very hard to sustain two competitions when you haven't got the big rotating squads that the likes of City and Liverpool and Man United have. So I do have some concerns around that, plus the fixture swing. I think just having Antonio in the next two, or in the next three, if you don't include including this one, makes a lot of sense. I don't think you need to have multiple. And with Soufal, you can move to so many people from him with his price.
Thanks, Sam. I've got three West Ham players, so that's not what I wanted to hear from you. I wanted to say,
keep Antonio. You can keep Soufal. I think you can keep Soufal till game week 8. So I think de-investing in Benrahma at the moment makes a lot of sense. Keeps you out till game week 8, and then maybe it's just ahead of that he goes and becomes a Chelsea defender, or you go Rudiger instead.
I think game week 8 is now when I'm going to be wildcarding. I think looking at my team for game week 7, I know there's a couple of fixture swings. My team looks all right for game week 7, apart from not having Lukaku, but I can do Ronaldo to him easy. And then I think I'd wildcard and then make this decision on the premiums, get rid of my West Ham players and move things around. So that's the current plan. But yeah, I definitely wildcarding around game week 8, de-investing in West Ham does seem pretty obvious just because of Europe and fixtures and everything like that. It's a classic one.
Doesn't mean I don't think that they'll score, by the way. This doesn't mean that I suddenly think West Ham are going to become terrible overnight. It just, as with everything in FPL, you're just playing the fixtures and you're playing the form and the potential points that they could score in those games. And if there's better points potential from other players in other matches, then it makes sense.
Yep. It'd be interesting. I mean, it'd be really interesting to see Moyes' first European lineup. Because if Antonio starts, for example, in that, it's going to be, whoa, okay, he's using his only fit striker now in Europe, who he's not going to play surely Thursday nights and at the weekend every week. So again, I think that's going to be an even more of a reason. So, and I think if you genuinely think Moyes is going to take the Europa League really seriously, then I think there's even more of a case for selling Antonio maybe this week. Some other questions. Another kind of psychological one for us. Nuclear atoms. How do you deal when outcomes go badly? And how do you pick yourself up towards the next game week? Yeah, pretty much.
Sit in a dark room, rock and cry. I think it depends though, doesn't it? Because there are some... So game week 4, for example, I was fully expecting a red arrow. So actually when it happened... I didn't feel a lot about it. I was like, yeah, okay, fair enough, move on. But there are some weeks, the ones that get me more are the weeks where you look at your team and you think, that looks like I'm going to have a belting week. And then Sunday night comes and you look at your team and you've got like 3 points because nobody's done anything. And there were a couple of people that I saw over the weekend that had played their wild cards that then had Antonio, Tanganga, they had Dyer in there, like they had all Mason Mount, they had players in there that then didn't play, got sent off, whatever. Those are the weeks when you think you're going to do well that it hurts more. And I think you just have to, I always try and look at it and think, I've got this team for a reason, for the fixtures, for the form that they had. One bad week doesn't make them a bad pick. It doesn't make them a bad team. There might be players in there that I think maybe that's the one that I can shuffle around with the following week. But the majority of them have been picked for a reason. And I think it's very easy sometimes to kind of throw toys out the pram and go, it's all gone horribly wrong, hit the wildcard button, when you don't need to, because actually the team itself is in good stead. It's just that they've had a dodgy week. So trying to kind of be logical with it, I think is what I try to do.
It's easy to try, isn't it? I know the feeling. Yeah, I mean, I think it helps me doing these streams and podcasts and everything, because I sometimes when something's gone badly, I can go back and listen to my decision making and think, okay, I did have reasons for doing what I did. It didn't pay off, but whatever. So obviously, if you're not doing streams, I think writing down decisions and looking at stats and stuff helps.
Yeah,
it provides. There you go.
Have one of these.
Exactly. There you go.
And I write in there what I'm doing every week. And actually, I find that really helpful because I can say there's justification for why I've done what I've done. And particularly when I'm torn between two players and I nearly always get it wrong, just because it's tough, isn't it, to decide out between two. But that decision, that thought process that you've gone through makes you feel better about having done it.
But it's why I hate, you know, I always complain about effective ownership and basing transfers and what other people are doing and all that. It's why I hate that, because they're the worst ones. When you don't back yourself and you just go with the crowd and you just do a safe pick and it doesn't pay off, and then you're kicking yourself because you didn't back yourself. They're just the ones I want to avoid. So I would say, to the question, how do you deal with bad outcomes? You just try and look at why you did the move in the first place. And as long as you had good reasons for it, then, you know, it's out of your hands, isn't it? It's still a game of luck.
And you're unlikely to have brought in a player for 1 week. Most managers won't bring in a player for one game week, then to move them on again. So just don't panic, I think. If you have a player that doesn't perform 1 week, it doesn't make them a bad pick.
Don't panic. It's good advice. Smalley _ 13. 310th in the world, Sam.
Oh,
gonna be honest, if I was 310th in the world, I would be looking at my rank and ignore everything I said earlier.
And I panic as well.
Yeah, I would be freaking out, because you've got a chance to be hitting, you know, into the top 10 from there.
I had that one season during, was it Project Restart season, and I was 485th, and I had that moment where I was like, what do I do? Do you play safe and cover what other people around you are doing? Or do you go all
It's just go so all early, isn't it?
I think at this stage, it's hard to go all out, isn't it? Whereas mine was, I was kind of about, I think it was about game week 30. And I was like, what do I do now? Do I try and go all out, or do I play it safe? And I sort of did neither.
I know. Well, that's the worry I'd have. I'd try and really attack it or really do something, and I'd either go too far one way and ruin it, or I'd panic and not do anything and wouldn't make a transfer for 10 weeks because I'm just sitting there rocking back and forth. Smalley's 310th in the world, and you're going to like his question. Antonio's out for him, but he wants to know if he should play Pookie.
Hey!
The Pookie party. Or whether he should get another player in. Basically, he's asking you, the biggest Pookie fanboy there is, should he play Pookie? And I think I know the answer.
I don't know why I've got such an obsession with Pookie at the moment. I can't shake it. And it's one of those things that I'm building my wildcard team, and every other draft has him in it, because I can't get away from the fact that I do think that if at any point this season Norwich are going to try and stay in this division, it's now, with the fixtures that they have. The fixtures are the best they're going to get for an extended period of time. So at this point, if Norwich want to get on the score sheet, if they want to register Premier League points, and if they want to try and get themselves a bit of a buffer from the relegation zone, this is the moment. And if there's a player at Norwich that's going to do that, it's surely Pookie. And this is where my head keeps going. So, plus, he's cheap. So this is the other thing I like about him. If he was 8 million, I'd be like, okay, but we're not doing that. But right now, he's offering good value for money in a team that has to start performing, and at a time where we want to free up money from other FPO assets to invest in premium. So, you know, if you're talking about taking Antonio down, because that gives you money to go Trent, to go Salah, to go Ronaldo, to go Lukaku, what is not to like? Because you don't always have to play him if you don't want to.
What is not to like is that Norwich are terrible, and he's struggling a lot in the Premier League, I think.
But they've got to, now's that moment though. Look at the fixtures. Like, if they're ever going to have a time where they try and survive, it's now. Surely it's now.
No, I completely agree. The thing is, I mean, they need to start using him better than they have been, because they need to start getting some goals out of him. If Smalley's question is, should I play him this week? Absolutely. I mean, if he's your bench option for Antonio, I think he's a great option to bring in. You know, he's got Watford at home.
What a differential as well he's going to be.
What a differential.
He's going to be first in the world.
If I was captain, hand him the armband. Go all out.
That's it. FPL life is done.
I love it. Honestly, I like it. I think Pookie for this week is a good pick. Genuinely, I'm not sure about him long term. I'm not sure about him over a prolonged period.
It doesn't have to be for a long period, though, does it?
No, exactly. And I think, you know, if you've got Tony and you're thinking of wildcarding in 7 or something like that, because that's a question from only one Arsene Wenger on Scout, is who's the best Tony replacements. I mean, there's only really 3, maybe. I mean, there's Mopay, you know my feelings on him. There's Pookie, or there's this new boy, isn't there? Edward from Palace.
Yeah,
who's intriguing. I mean, he's got an XG per 90 of about, he's going to get about, what, 100 goals this season? He carries on his current rate. He scores with every touch. Can't get better than that.
Scores with every touch. And against Spurs as well. Can do it against the big boys, you know?
No, it's Spurs, Sam.
Yeah. Well, to be honest, right, I'd rule more play out because I just...
Oh, don't apologise. I have no loyalty to him.
Eduardo, I think he's interesting, but he's so far only done it in like a very short period of time
against
a Spurs defence that was basically Harry Kane. and at a moment where Spurs were in, I don't even know where they were mentally at that point. He's got Liverpool next. I don't see there being a huge amount of returns for him against Liverpool, if I'm honest. But could I see returns for Pookie this weekend? Ridiculously, I could. So I think if you want a replacement for Tony, why not go Pookie? It frees up some money as well, it's cheaper. And then particularly if you're going to wildcard in seven, like it's basically three nice weeks of Pookie action, and then you move him on.
Is he sponsoring this stream and I just haven't been informed? Is it?
Secretly, we're related. No, oh, we're not. We're definitely not.
That would be amazing.
I don't know. Look, I think it's because of his price point. I think that's part of the reason why I'm so drawn to him at the moment, because at a time where budgets are such a big talking point in FPL, we're all kind of scratching around for 0.5 or 0.4 if they've taken a drop. To have somebody like Pookie that you can come in, that can be that third striker, it's not got to be your second striker, it can be your third striker, so you can bench him, but you know he's going to play, so if you need him to come on, he will. Not to like?
This is like a carbon copy of last week. You are absolutely enamoured with Timu Pookie. It's fantastic to listen to. I think
I'm the only member of his fan club.
I think you probably are. You haven't even got him. I mean, Edouard is an interesting one. I mean, the palette, because I really like Gallagher.
I do too.
He's someone that, you know, I saw in his first match when he hit the kind of the outside of the bar. And Palace started a bit better, and then he followed that up with the goals against West Ham and two assists again this week. So it's clearly someone who's doing well despite kind of a tricky run. The trouble is the fixtures don't get better. I'm just looking at Palace's fixtures and thinking, when do they have a nice run of games? And they just don't, like, for ages. It's hard to kind of get too excited about them. I think Edouard will do well. I'm really disappointed as a Brighton fan that we didn't sort of move for him and get him, you know, and
you're just disappointed you didn't move for anyone, aren't you?
Well, yeah, that's a very good point. Because Palace's fixtures, for example, Liverpool, Brighton, Leicester, Arsenal, Newcastle, Man City, Wolves. It's just very bounce, bounce, bounce. You know, it's tricky. But I think if I was wildcarding and I was looking for someone around six, I still think I'd go for Gallagher. I think he's classy. He's a really, really classy player, really threatening. He's dominating set pieces. He's playing really far up the pitch. They're looking to get him involved in all the action. So yeah, I really like him. I think it just might be a bit too soon for Edouard. Tony is a bit of a problem for me. I've got him in my team and his fixture runs pretty bad as well. Yeah, interesting one. I think, to answer your question, who's the best Tony replacement? Oh, God, I really don't want to say Pookie.
You're going to. Because you've got to go up. That's the other thing. To replace Pookie with any... Still talking about Pookie. To replace Tony with anyone else, you've really got to go up to ensure game time.
What about Dennis? 5.2.
The problem I have with Dennis is that just Watford have struggled. They've struggled. Like, I know they started the season well going forward and so did Dennis, but we haven't seen that in the last 2 weeks. You know, they had a disappointing performance against Spurs and a disappointing performance against Wolves. And do I see him regularly returning? I don't know. Because now they've got other players in there as well that could play instead of him. Like, there's more rotation risk with him potentially as well.
Yeah, I mean, Joao Pedro is now back in training. Who's their
Josh
kind of...
Josh King's there now.
Josh King's. They've got a lot of strikers. I mean, the thing is there a huge amount, if you take off your Pookie rose tinted glasses for a second, is there a huge amount of difference between Dennis and Pookie? But Dennis is 5.2 and Pookie 6. I'm not really sure there is, and it depends what you can do with the extra money that you get if you move Tony down. Who, Pookie?
Yeah, he was.
What, just off, nice. Just off the back of...
off the back of me, probably. Badgering him all the time.
Yeah, 5.9 you know, is.
I get your point. Like, that point, what is it, 7, is different. It is a significant difference when you're building a team. But if you're already coming down from Tony, you're already saving yourself money anyway. So I guess it depends what you're going to do with the money, doesn't it? If you're going if you're going to invest that money and it's important for somebody else that you think is really key to your team, then it's worth going Dennis. If you're not going to necessarily need to invest that additional 0.7 somewhere else, then the security of game time would probably lean me back towards Pookie. But, you know, there are other options at Watford that we shouldn't rule out. There are plenty of Watford options that you could go with, but they're just not scoring a lot of goals.
My answer to this question is...
It's Pookie.
Neither. I don't want any Watford or Norwich players... You know,
so what would you do? Stick with Tony?
I would stick with Tony, I think, out of the three, if I was going to do that. I like Brentford. I think they're a good side. Okay, they've got an awful run of games. But
would you go up?
If I had to pick between those three, I think I'd stay with Tony. But I would be looking to move up. And I think moving up to Jimenez, for example, who's 7.4, that's only a million difference. You can find that cash somewhere else.
The midfield has got potential for... There's potential in the midfield. You know, you talked about Gallagher. There's potential for the midfield where you could bring somebody down. And in doing that, you'd have the money to then take him up. So it is workable. But again, I guess that depends on where you are in your FPL journey. If you're wildcarding, it's very easy to make those changes. If you're doing it on free transfers, it's maybe more difficult.
I'd rather take a hit than go with Pookie or Dennis. I think that's where I'd be at.
I'm going to... One of these days this season, Pookie is going to go mental.
I'm going to be just old and grey. Yeah, he's going to get like a 20-point haul, isn't he?
I'm going to ring you up. I'm going to ring you up. In fact, when I think it's going to happen, I'll invite you out for dinner and you can watch it happen with me.
That's fine. I'll take that. You can cook me a nice roast and we'll watch Pookie go absolutely mad. I like it. So a couple more super chats. Talking about Gallagher. Stephen Gallagher says, I have to play 4-5-1 due to Antonio and DCL being out. And this is quite a good question. Would you do DCL to Bamford or Jimenez?
Oh, that is a good question.
He has Eiling and Rafinha as well, so it'd mean a triple up of Leeds.
I don't think I'd want to triple up on Leeds. It was a tighter decision until he said he had the other two. I think
two questions. Firstly, which would you pick just generally out of Bamford and Jimenez? And secondly, what would you do in Stephen's case?
Bamford's potential goal point scores per week is probably higher than Jimenez. Jimenez tends to have a bit of a one goal a game ceiling pre-injury anyway. He was never one for getting massive hauls, whereas we know that Bamford can do that. The Leeds fixtures are nice, so are the Wolves fixtures. But I would say that Wolves are a far better side this season than Leeds are. They are getting their XG stuff, their XGI stuff. They're going in the right direction, Wolves. They just haven't, until last week, they hadn't started on the goal scoring path yet. But now that they've kind of done that against Watford, I suspect that we might see that continue. So I'd lean towards Jimenez of the two of them.
Interesting. I think I'd lean towards Bamford out of the two. I just want to see Jimenez get a goal. Because I just think, you know, the injury, we spoke about this on the Scout the Game the other day, it's just that kind of confidence that he needs from getting a goal just to kind of get over this injury and kind of refocus himself. I think once he's got that, he's going to be back to, you know, getting them quite regularly. But the longer he goes without a goal, just the more I worry he's going to get in his own head and keep missing chances. And they've got options. I mean, a few people in chat have mentioned Hwang, for example, who came in and played well. So now he's putting pressure on the likes of Trincao, Pedence is there. They've got options as well. So if it carries on with Jimenez, he could end up coming out of the spot. You know, they might want to take him out of the spotlight a bit, maybe give him some early subs. I don't know. I just feel a bit uneasy with him not having scored or got anything yet.
I think maybe I'm a little bit blinded by the fact that I already own Jimenez. And with the fixtures the way they are, it's difficult to take out a player that's got fixtures the way that they have. So maybe if I had neither at the moment, it would be a different conversation, but I'm still not convinced that I'd want to be trebled up on leads. I haven't seen a lot from them that would suggest that three of them is a good idea.
Eiling just isn't a good pick, in my opinion. I think if you've got Eiling and you've got a transfer, I think just get rid of him. Leeds are just awful defensively.
They're terrible, yeah.
I mean, Eiling is probably likely to move over to centre-back. They've got suspensions, they've got injuries. Cooper's having a poor season again. Llorente's out. It's a bit of a nightmare at the back. So I think going with Bamford and Rafinha, you know, could be quite a good move with the fixtures they've got. But
the double up would be fine. Yeah,
I think Eiling, you're right, is too much going with three. Shout out to Hungry for More AU. Good day from Australia. It's 8 p.m. here, and he finally gets to watch something live. He loves us. Loves us, Sam. Thank you.
Aww,
hello to Australia. David
Toft.
Hello, on
the Eurovision Song Contest now. Shouting out.
Yeah, I know. It's quite fun doing these. Hello to Paraguay and everywhere else. David Toft, Benrahma or Barnes? Who would you swap as a priority out of those two, and who would you get? I mean, God, if you still got Barnes, bloody hell, he's got to go. Surely he's got to go, right?
Yeah, Barnes would be a much, much bigger priority for selling than Benrahma would.
Yeah, who would you move him to?
Got money in the bank or not money in the bank, I suppose. Let's assume not. Well, we've already spoken about going really cheap, and there are plenty of really cheap options that you could go down to, but the Leeds fixtures are nice. So I'd be tempted to go with Rafinha.
Yep. That was my pick as well.
The fixtures are nice. He's always got potential in him for a goal, for an assist. So yeah, probably would go Rafinha.
Yeah, Rafinha seems the obvious one for me. Maybe Gallagher if you're trying to save a bit more money. Or possibly, I still prefer Doucouré over Gray, but so one of them. But there's not a huge amount of options, really. But Rafinha seems to be the standout. Ole Johnny DeVito asks, he's waiting for Bamford news. Yeah, there's some worry about Bamford and his hamstrings because he mentioned them pinging or something.
He's pinging hamstrings, yeah.
I can't see anything. I reckon he'll be fine. He did the like post-match conference and stuff and seemed quite upbeat. So I don't think he's...
Yeah, and he's done an FPL interview I saw this week with Kelly Summers. And
yeah, I think he's fine.
I don't think it's a serious thing.
But Ole Johnny DeVito asks about Aubameyang. And we had this last week and we laughed him off and then he scored.
Oh, yeah, but...
Do you think Arsenal can start picking up some form? Do you think Aubameyang could be an option again?
I really struggle. To be honest, because, and this is Spurs aside, I really struggle because, yes, they did get a result against Norwich, but everyone else can beat Norwich by 5-0, 3-0. Like, Norwich have been getting battered, and they didn't get battered by Arsenal. They got beaten, but it wasn't conclusive.
They got the job done.
Yeah. And I sort of feel like, I wasn't that convinced. Watching it back on Match of the Day afterwards, I was like, yeah, decent performance from Aubameyang. But I wasn't that inspired to spend the level of budget that you've got to spend on him. That's my problem, is that, yes, he could get goals, and I think he probably will because the Arsenal fixtures are nice. But it's so much money at a time where I'm trying to budget for Lukaku and Ronaldo and Salah, who I trust far more to return than I would Aubameyang.
I mean, they've got Burnley away this week, so fairly decent fixture. Then Spurs, then Brighton, then Palace, then Villa, then Leicester. They're kind of like twos and threes on the FPL ticker, but I don't think they're that good fixtures. I mean, Spurs is a derby. It could kind of go either way. Brighton away is...
They've got a defence.
Yeah, if you've got defenders back.
Brighton, you've got a decent defence.
Brighton
that's
away,
going to be tough.
Yeah, that'd be a tough game. Then Palace are playing well as well. Yeah. And again, another London derby.
The error factor.
Yeah. Villa at home, you know, with Martinez. Leicester away. I mean, these aren't... I don't think the fixtures are that good. I think you could take a punt maybe on Saka at 6-3 if you wanted to kind of try and tap into it.
The budget thing plays into it, doesn't it? You want to go Smith Rowe, you want to go Saka, you want to go Ben White. Fine. Look, that's fine. But Aubameyang...
I just don't see how he can fit into your side. I completely agree. I think there's, you know, with Ronaldo, Lukaku, Jimenez, Bamford, you know, Calvert-Lewin when he's back fit, these guys are just all superior in my eyes. So, yeah, I think you can do much better with 9.9, personally. I think, Sam, that is probably about it, unless I'm missing anything from the chat. Let me just have a quick look. Darwin Singh mentions, yeah, Magnus Carlsen got Aubameyang this week on his wild card, which was a surprise. I wonder what he's going to... I don't know if he just got him in for the Norwich game, whether he's going to sell him on. It
might be one of those. It might have been a fixture thing. It might have been... Because I think if you were... So I think if I had wildcarded last week, then maybe I might have thought about it just for that one game and then move him on afterwards, knowing it's basically, you know, take him out, save a bit of money, go Lukaku straight after. Maybe there's that element to it. Particularly if you thought, oh, I want to wait for 7 for Lukaku, maybe I could go Aubameyang for a couple of weeks to before I get there. But yeah, I don't know.
A few Arsenal fans in the chat not happy that we're saying Arsenal struggled a bit against Norwich. I don't think we said they struggled. They just didn't.
Not that they struggled. It's just that they didn't.
You'd expect them to beat Norwich, who are probably the worst team in the league, 3-0. It's Arsenal.
Yeah, I basically expected them to beat Norwich in the same way that Liverpool did or in the same way that Man City did, because they've got... Because the quality of the players that Arsenal have, they should be beating Norwich by 2, 3, 4 goals. Mm. The fact that it was 1 just concerns me a little bit.
Yeah, I completely agree. Arsenal should be aspiring for more against Norwich.
100%.
They're Arsenal FC. It shows how far they've fallen if you think a 1-0 is a really, you know, great result.
You take the win, of course you take the win, but you when you look back at the performance, you think actually
I suppose it's a good result, you know, in a relegation battle against a, you know, a relegation threatened side.
You said that, not me, before anybody says Sam's bashing Arsenal.
6-pointer, Sam. 6-pointer.
What are you going to say when it's Derby Day in a couple of weeks' time? Because in theory, like...
Well, you know, they don't, you know, they're the kind of games they don't need to win to stay up.
Oh!
Sorry, Arsenal fans. Oh, yeah, very harsh. Very harsh. Yeah.
The Arsenal fans will not be back next week.
It's about composure, isn't it? I mean, they had a few people rightly pointing out they had tons of shots in that game against Norwich, but it doesn't matter if you're not going to be converting them, and they're not going to get tons of shots against better teams. So,
no, and the other thing is that you know they're not highly owned in FPL, so I think at this point in time when you're trying to work out who's worth a risk, Aubameyang, who hasn't really been performing that well in the early part of the season and is lowly owned, so isn't, you know, yes, it's a good differential if he does get a goal. But you're not missing out on loads if you don't get him.
Yep, I agree. The only Arsenal player I'd consider still is Tierney.
You love Tierney.
I do.
Talk about me and Pookie.
I know.
You and Tierney.
I love Tierney. The problem with Tierney is he's going to get injured soon and then not be an option again. But when he is playing, he creates so many chances and gets so far forward. I really rate him. Just two more people I'm going to shout out to. So Hungry for More AU, I said he, and it's not a he, it's a she, and I apologise. That's my sexism coming to the fore. Although we did the survey results from Scout were funny. I asked, you know, male, female, you know, different genders and stuff, and it was what, like 97% male or something that used the site. So
more women, please.
Yeah, we definitely need to bring in some more women and get that balance restored a little bit. But yeah, apologies for that. She says, how much longer is Duffy going to keep starting?
Well, that's one for you.
Yeah, I mean, the Webster injury is interesting. Hopefully he's not out for long for Brighton's sake. Obviously, if he is injured for a while, then that cements Duffy even longer. Lamptey, God knows when he's going to be back. As long as he's out, Veltman's going to be over on the right and not be a threat to Duffy as well. Burn's still out. When Burn comes back, he's going to be a threat to Duffy. There's lots of players that can come back and threaten his spot, but
wouldn't take him out at the moment though, would you? Even if all these players came back tomorrow,
no, I don't
know. Defensively so good, why would he change?
Veltman was always going to come straight back into the side because he's the best right wing back we've got, and he's a great option at centre back. Burn isn't that great. Like, Burn isn't going to come in and go straight in for Duffy. I wouldn't have thought. So I think Duffy's good for a while. I think it's Lamptey coming back that could potentially put the most pressure on him, because that means Veltman would move back over to centre back. And I think he's the one, because ideally, I've said this a few times, our strongest back line is Lamptey, providing he's got, you know, he's had surgery on his hamstring, providing that's all okay. Veltman, Webster, Dunk, and then Cucurella on the left. So Duffy doesn't feature in that. But I think it's a while until Lamptey comes back. I mean, he's been out for
a year.
He's
not back in training yet, is he?
No, I think he was doing like individual training about 3 or 4 weeks ago. I've got no idea. I don't know if he's going to be the same player. He's probably going to... lost his pace. It's going to take him ages to get back up to speed.
To build back up.
It's a hell of a
long time. He's not going to come straight back in and play 90 minutes every week.
No. And I mean, to have had a surgery on your hamstring at like, what, 19 years old, something like that.
It's bad.
Oh, it really sucks. So, yeah, we'll see what happens. But yeah, we will leave it there. Thank you, everyone, for joining us. We'll be back again next week to do another one of these. And yeah, as I said, get your questions in on Scout, on Instagram or on Twitter. Or again, next week we'll have the Super Chats open. So if you want to ask any on that, and we've had a few. So thank you for all of those. Hopefully we were helpful for your decisions. But yeah, we'll be back next week. Thanks for joining me, Sam.